Sports Talk New York with your hosts Mark Rosenman and AJ Carter. Sports Talk New York is sponsored in part by Prince Associates, Send in the Clowns, the Phoenix Tube Company, CelebrityTrips.com, the law firm of Decalator Cohen and DePrisco, Solomon Jewelers, and Relish Restaurant of Kings Park. Here are your hosts, Mark and AJ.
Joining us now is a man who played college hockey at Miami University in the Central Collegiate Hockey League. He was signed as a free agent by the Florida Panthers on March 30th, 1998, after he went undrafted. After his first two seasons in the Panthers' farm system in the AHL, earning all-rookie team honors both season, he earned a full-time roster spot with the Panthers in 2000-2001 season, recording 4 goals and 22 points as a rookie. He currently sits at number 32 on the all-time list of goals scored by a defenseman with 163, 35th all-time in points. To put that in perspective, that's 65 points more than NHL Hall of Famer Doug Harvey. He currently sits at number 1 in active scoring by defensemen in the NHL. He's won both the Stanley Cup and a gold medal. He is one of 4 players in NHL history to lead 2 franchises, Tampa Bay and San Jose, in career points by a defenseman. The other 3, Paul Coffey, Scott Niedermeyer, and Al MacInnis, are all in hockey's Hall of Fame. It is a pleasure to welcome a man whose career surely has him headed to the NHL Hall of Fame, Dan Boyle, to WLIE Sports Talk New York. Welcome, Dan.
Oh, thanks. That was very nice.
You know, it's very interesting because I went back to our archives, and believe it or not, I was actually the first voice reporter you heard on the conference call the day you signed with the Rangers. And the question I asked you that day was, with all the other offers on the table that had more money, why did you pick New York? And you mentioned that the Rangers were where you wanted to play, how you wanted to play for an original six team in a traditional hockey market. So first off, after playing for the Rangers, was it everything you had hoped it to be? And secondly, as a player now who's played both in traditional and non-traditional hockey markets, is there a difference from a hockey standpoint for a player?
Well, yeah, this is what I wanted to be, and yeah, it was worth it. This was an amazing team, amazing organization. I think they treat their players. I mean, I've been pretty fortunate. I'm not knocking on the other 3, but these guys here, they do it right. They take care of their players real well, and it was an honor and a privilege, and I can, you know, all that stuff. But it really is a great organization, and you know, I don't regret it for 1 second. So, and as far as what was your second question?
The difference between playing in a traditional and non-traditional market.
Yeah. You know why, man? Again, it is different. You know, there's obviously a lot more people in New York than 3 other places combined that I've played. But no, I can't. You know, every other place is great as well. The other 3 teams that I played for didn't have the history, obviously, that the New York Rangers had, but the fan base, I mean, especially, you know, in San Jose, obviously the last team that I was at, the fans are starving. I mean, they love the game. They love hockey. You would never think so out there in California, but they love it. And the people in Florida have embraced the game as well. And, you know, obviously in 2004, it all kind of came together for us in Tampa. So I was pretty fortunate, pretty lucky to be in 4 amazing spots. And, you know, it was pretty just amazing. Just being in the NHL period was a blessing.
You know, I followed up that question by talking about how the Rangers signed you to bolster what had been a glaring weakness up until that point for them, which was the power play, and for you to be the quarterback of the power play, and how you would deal with the pressure of being a quarterback for the Rangers. The fan base really wanted it so bad, and your response was, and I quote, "I enjoy the pressure. You have to be prepared for that. I've already been forewarned, but I've been in pressure situations before, like the Stanley Cup Finals, Olympic gold medal games, and I actually thrive on that." That being said, do you truly feel that you were ever actually given the keys to that power play to do everything you could have given to the team?
I think another good question, man. I think last year, I think if you were to go back last year, I got hurt first game of the season. I'm going 2 years now, I guess.
Yeah. With a broken hand?
You know, yeah. And then when I came back, the power play was, I want to say, dead last in the NHL, and it took a little time, but after a while we went up to 5th at a certain point in time. We were clicking, you know, and I remember feeling feeling really good about it, and then we went cold, and then it just kind of trailed off, and I don't know where we ended up at the end of the year. This year was a little bit different. You know, we struggled right off the bat, and, you know, with Keith here, I think he was handed the keys, so to speak, and to use your terms, but for pretty much, you know, the most of the season. So, but just to add to, you know, to the question, you know, a power play is not just one guy. One guy can help, of course, but, you know, I think I mentioned that to you 2 years ago. I think it takes all five guys. You know, you can't, you know, so I think not one guy, of course, a guy can help, but, you know, you can bring the best. Eric Carlson, you can bring him in here. And if the other guys don't react off them properly, it's not going to work. So at the end of the day, you know, it didn't, I think at times I thought we looked great, we played great, and at times it didn't work, but I didn't come here just for the power play, obviously.
Right, absolutely. Now, you know, I think the sports media sometimes is guilty of undervaluing what it really takes to win a championship, especially in hockey. And they put expectations on a team and view anything less of those expectations as failures. In speaking to guys who have won the Cup over the years, it's become so obvious to me that not only does a team have to be talented, but everything has to go a team's way along that run. As someone who knows what it takes, can you put into words what it takes both from an individual standpoint and from a team standpoint to advance as far as you did last year and to get the ultimate prize, the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I don't know who it was. Somebody told me once that the best team doesn't win the Stanley Cup. It's the best team at that point in time. So, you know, you have a team president, for example, the President Cup teams, the teams that are the best teams throughout the course of the year. I don't know what the statistics are, but very few of them win the actual Stanley Cup because I would say for the most part, most of them are not the best team at the right time. So, you know, you have teams that come together, you know, late in the season, and then they, you know, have a 2 month ride, and at the end of the day, they're hoisting the cup. So, you know, it's the team that plays best at the right time. And as far as what it takes, I mean, I could sit and talk to you for hours about what it takes. It takes everybody. It takes everybody. It obviously takes goaltending. It takes a good defenseman. It takes a good core forward, and it takes a great surrounding group. And everybody's got to play their role. And you know, if one of those things isn't clicking at the right time, you're probably not going to end up, you know, raising the championship at the end. So the odds are stacked. I mean, one team wins it every year, and it's obviously a very hard thing to do.
So that being said, when the media places tags such as failure or windows closing on teams if they didn't win the cup, given the state of the game today and how difficult it is just to make the playoffs, you sit back, it's a little more than a week since the Penguins eliminated you guys, a season in which there were periods of great team play, a period of some awful play, a season marked by inconsistency, but yet at the end of the day, it gave you the 9th best record overall in the entire league with 101 points. Do you view that as a failure?
I don't. I think the goal from day one is to make it in the playoffs, and you said it perfectly. I mean, it felt at times this year like we were the worst team in the league. I mean, there was this negative cloud above us because of expectations that you talk about. Again, that's where, you know, coaches and leaders in the locker room, we talk about it. You know, the goal is to make the playoffs, and then you kind of start from scratch. You know, like you said, I mean, we finished 9th overall in the league. I mean, that's pretty good. And as far as, I mean, failure, I mean, everybody sets out on day one, and the goal is to make a playoffs, and the goal is to win championship. If you want to look at not, you know, getting bounced in the first, second, or third round as a failure, then yeah, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, but you have to be realistic as well and realize that the likelihood of winning a championship is very small, and that's, you know, the stuff we talked about. It's all got to come together at the right time. But everybody sets out to win, and 99.9% of the, you know, teams don't.
Which is echoed by the fact that already more than half of the top nine teams are no longer in the playoffs right now, bouncing the first round.
Good point.
You look at your 2 years as a Ranger, 1-9 goals, 11 assists, a plus 18, while getting the lowest amount of ice time since your days with the Panthers. You tied for the most goals by a defenseman that year, as well as tied for most power play goals by a defenseman. This past year, you lead in both categories, while, again, having the least amount of ice time in a number of years. When you look at those numbers, are they kind of what you expected that they'd be at the end of the year?
Well, I think, I don't know if this is going to answer the question or not, but I didn't really have expectations as far as goals, assists, or points were coming in. I think my goal, like I said, I was coming in as a 38-year-old. All I cared about was another chance to get to the Stanley Cup Finals. And the one thing that I've been trying to say for 2 years, and I haven't been able to say the right way, and I'm going to piggyback, and I think he said it perfectly, was Eric Staal. And I think a few of us that have kind of gone through here the last few years, I've spoken to and still talk to, he said it best. He said he just felt that he just needed a bigger role. And that's kind of how I felt. I felt that I would have liked a bigger role here. And obviously people are going to say what they're going to say. You don't deserve it, or, you know, whatever, and that's fine. I mean, I would have liked more responsibility and yes, more ice time. You know, you can only do so much when you're not playing. I mean, that's every competitive player will tell you, the more they play, the better they are. So as far as expectations, they were strictly team expectations. I didn't have any individual goals. But in hindsight and looking back, it's not a regret, but I certainly wished that I could have been given a better role, which I need to earn. But I believe that I would have been able to perform better with more minutes and a bigger role. But it is what it is, and everyone's going to have an opinion on why that wasn't. But it doesn't take away from the fact that I absolutely enjoyed being here and absolutely love the guys that I played with.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because that was a recurring theme in a lot of the post-game interviews that I would do with you. And there were times where you would get on a run and things were really clicking, and then there'd be like an obstacle, whether it be, first of all, coming back from San Jose with the concussion, then the broken hand, the flu, some personal issues. As an older player, is it more difficult to get back in that rhythm with the time off than it was when you were younger?
And again, when I was young, it was always about me being too small. And the last couple of years is always about me being too old. To be honest with you, I'm realistic. I'm not, drinking the Kool-Aid here. I know that I'm certainly not the player that I was. So you have to train differently. You have to prepare differently. And I think where I noticed it was probably at the beginning of the seasons, where it took a little longer to get going. So the starts to the season were probably not as good as I wanted them to be. But once I got going, I think that, once you get over that hump, you're fine. And as far as setbacks go, you're going to find that throughout the course of a season, whether you're 39 or 29, you just gotta bounce back. But again, you just when you're on a good team, like I felt that this Rangers team was, I think one of the tough things as individuals is that everybody has to, whether it's Eric Staal or Mark Staal or whoever, everybody's got to is going to get let. There's only so much ice time. There's only so much. When you have a good team, everybody gets a little bit less, and sometimes it hurts the individual performance. But regardless, again, at the end of the day, it's all about winning hockey games. That's all I cared about. That's all the team should care about. And, at times it was good, of course, and at times it wasn't. So it's bittersweet.
Yeah, you mentioned that breakup day, there are some teams that have interest in you. Have you made up your mind as to what the future holds? And after putting up these Hall of Fame numbers as an undrafted player, winning a cup, a gold medal, is there still something you want to accomplish in the game?
Winning another cup would be nice. I'm certainly leaning towards retirement. There's definitely no doubt about that. It's way past the 50-50 point. I just want to be 100% sure. And at this point, I'm not. Mm-hmm. You know, whether I wake up a week from now or a month from now and know it, I'll know it when the time comes. You know, as far as, you know, interest from other teams, obviously, we're not allowed to speak to other teams
until July 1st, right?
A certain in time. But, you know, you know, stuff filters through and you have, you know, teammates on other teams and ex-coaches or whatever it might be. And, you know, there's interest. But I haven't given it too much thought, to be honest with you. I'm just trying to relax here, enjoy my kids, which is a big reason why I, you know, and certainly contemplating and leaning towards retirement. I have two kids, 5 and a 7-year-old girls, and I just, especially this year, was really, really hard being away, and I just want to be a dad right now.
So then looking back on your career, you look at the coaches you've played for in your career, Roy Somer, Joe Patterson in the minors with two pretty interesting assistants in the minors as well, Gerard Gallant, who's having had a pretty decent success this year, Nick Fatiu, then obviously Terry Murray, Dwayne Sutter, Torts, Todd McLennan, and AV in the pros, as well as Mike Babcock in the Olympics. If you could take the traits from all of them to make one super coach, what would they be?
Oh, geez. Tough questions. There's no perfect person. There's no perfect player. There's no perfect coach. So, you know, I think everybody's going to have their pros and everybody's going to have their cons. At the end of the day, from a coach, you want somebody that's going to lead you. You want to make sure that, you know, somebody does it the right way. Obviously, you know, back to you want somebody that believes in you and is going to give you the opportunity to perform. That's part of it. And I think it's also important for a coach to be open-minded. He is the boss, but the players are the ones that play the game. When a coach's mindset it's my way or the highway, I personally don't agree with that. I think that the good coaches that I've had over the course of my career have been open to discussing with me what I saw, and doesn't mean they're going to listen to it, but at least it's having an open door concept where if there's something that I see that he may not be seeing, he's open to exploring, you know, maybe what the players see. And not just me, of course, all my teammates and the guys that I've played with. And I think that's where a very good coach comes in, is he's got a little bit of mixture of both.
I have to imagine, you know, Mike Babcock having to coach an Olympic team when you have everyone as a star had to be a challenge for him. What was the Olympic, you know, experience like for you and winning that gold? What does that gold medal mean to you?
Yeah, well, I think I've said this in the past. I think the growing up for me, my goal is to play one game in the NHL, let alone what everything else that I've had the opportunity to do. But I think winning the cup was personal. It was like, this is what I want. This is what's for me. With the gold medal, it was more about the country. It was more like the 30, however many millions of people are in Canada. It was about them. And it was a different experience. And with the cup, you're together for 9 months. You're going through a huge, crazy long grind. With the Olympics, you're with guys that you're still obviously bonded to, but it's, you know, 2 weeks or however long, 2 to 3 weeks. So it's much shorter, much more condensed, and more pressure in a way, because it's from the people around you. As far as comparing it to the Stanley Cup, which was, of course, you got your teammates and your organization and your fans, but the main pressure for that was on myself versus my country, so to speak. So
interesting. Lastly, one of the main reasons I wanted you on with us tonight is because I've had the pleasure of covering your 2 years here in New York. And like most hockey players, I've found you to be honest and open and available and have respected your work both on and off the ice. And because of all of that, I found what happened at Rangers breakup day to be so out of character for you. And I really don't want Ranger fans to have that to be what you are remembered for. As a member of the media, we're around players a lot. And as individuals, we get a sense of what that player is, both as a player and a man. But obviously, we only see small glimpses, and that forms our opinion. For me, what I saw from you over the 2 years I covered you was a very prideful man, a man who always would give you the time and answer the questions honestly. I viewed you as one of the great ambassadors of the game, someone someone who took pride in wearing the jersey, as well as representing the sport. So for me, what transpired at Rangers breakup day seemed so out of character, and it's not the Dan Boyle I know. So for me, there had to be some reason what precipitated that and what made you so angry with Larry Brooks, who is viewed as one of the preeminent hockey writers of our time. So do you care to speak about that?
Yeah, I don't mind speaking about it at all. You're right. I've been doing this for 18 years. I don't know how many reporters I've dealt with, people from the media, and I would bet every dollar that I own that I have zero problems with 99.9% of them. Some of them I call friends. And thank God for unlimited texting, because my phone has blown up over the last days, and it's been overwhelmingly positive in my favor. Now, to rewind a little bit, of course, Larry and Brett or whatever, and there's probably one more guy that is in there. I think over the course of the 2 years that I've been here, I've never seen so much negative covering of the game and negative destruction of individuals. So, yes, I was upset about some of the stuff that was said about me, but more importantly, I felt like I needed to be a voice for my teammates. And I can tell you from teammates and ex-teammates and guys from other teams and guys that have come through here and have dealt with these individuals, it was overwhelming how many thank yous that I got for what I said and what they didn't have the courage to say or couldn't say. Now, I regret having said it in front of the rest of the media, because 99.9% of everyone there didn't deserve to hear that coming from me. And probably made him feel uncomfortable. So I do apologize to them, but I do not for one second take back what I said to Larry and Brett. And I do not take that back for one second, because the things that they have done and said over the course of the last 2 years and the way that they go about what they do, I'm going to disagree with you. For whatever reason, yes, some of the media follow and respect, but there's plenty, and I'm not going to throw anybody on the bus that would not do anybody any good, but there's plenty that don't. And I think that, with people talking, well, I heard, well, don't make it personal. Okay, well, let me see. Let me say the worst things about you for 2 years. So you're allowed to say that because you have freedom of speech and freedom of opinion. But if we turn the table for one second, and I voice my opinion for 30 seconds, I can't do that. So freedom of speech goes both ways. So I appreciate what you said. You're right. I have, like I said, I respect most of the media, with the few exceptions, of course. I've felt that I've carried myself in the right way over the course of my career. This was possibly the last time I was going to deal with the media. I didn't think that I was going to blow up, but I felt that I haven't spoken to Larry all year, and then for him to come around like this on the last day set me off a little bit. And when I asked him to leave and he refused, the wires got crossed a little bit there, and I lost my cool. So I wish I could have done it behind closed doors and voiced my opinion out that way. Wasn't the case, unfortunately. And again, apologize to the rest of the people that were there, but not for one second do I apologize about what I said to him, because I meant every word.
You know, it's interesting, because as a radio guy, I'm allowed to show my fandom, okay? And everyone who watches and listens to the show knows that I'm a Ranger fan first and foremost, a reporter secondly. So, my bend is a little different. In the age of Twitter and the way the mainstream media has gone now, and the TMZs of the world, and people looking to differentiate themselves from the other reporters, have you seen a change in the way the media has covered the sport since you came into the league until now?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't do any social media. I don't have Twitter. I don't have any of those stuff. I know most of my teammates do. I didn't read anything this year. But of course, friends and family and others do. So that stuff filters through. And I may not read anything, but somebody else does. And that negative stuff gets into the locker room. And that's what pissed me off, because especially, again, throughout the course of this year. And that's not good. That negativity and that constant breaking down of individuals eventually gets through. Not everyone has tough skin. I feel that I can take a lot, and it wasn't so much me, but it just upset me that some guys get affected by that, and it really bothered me. And you're right. I mean, I feel that everybody's got the right to their own opinion, and as athletes, we look the other way most of the time. But I don't need to rehash specifically a few specific incidents I had with Larry, but they were personal for reasons that I don't need to get into. I think it should be water under the bridge at this point, but it was deserved. And he's not the only one that's been negative about me for the last 18 years, but you haven't seen me blow up on anybody else. So pretty sure there's a good reason. And again, it wasn't just about me. It was about my teammates. And moving forward, these guys are going to have to deal with him. And I just hope that maybe there's a lesson learned here, that there's a way to cover the game with your opinion, but there's a way to do it properly, I believe.
That being said, you know, that locker room is a very, very tight-knit locker room, great group of guys. What was the reaction from your teammates after? Obviously, no one had any idea that this was going to happen. This happened spur of the moment. Right. What was the reaction from the group?
I appreciate the question. I think that some things need to be kept within just the guys and ourselves. So I'm going to leave it at that. I'm pretty sure if you paid any attention to what I've been saying, you could figure it out. But I think that, some things, I of course agreed to talk to you today, but I think that some things need to be, I don't need to let everybody know what goes on behind closed doors. I think that needs to stay there, and we'll just leave it at that. Of course, I did mention the overwhelming positive feedback that I got from the ones that reached out to me and contacted me. So, again, we're beating a dead horse here, but you said it. I mean, this team, just going back as far as teammates go, is phenomenal. It's a great, great group of guys, and a very good hockey team too, that just didn't get it done. But this was a very, very good group of guys that I was absolutely proud and honored to be with.
Dan, as always, I appreciate your time, your honesty, and more than that, just the 18 years of great hockey, being an ambassador for the sport as well. Good luck. Hopefully, this is not the last time I get to talk hockey with you. Maybe one day we'll talk Faith No More down the road as well.
That would be great.
All right. Thanks so much, Dan.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Dan Boyle, Stanley Cup and Olympic gold medal winner.